government representatives and experts from the United Nations have been engaged in a participatory discussion aimed to develop a national law on internal displaced and its full implementation.
Well, the same event marked the 20th anniversary of the launch of the Guiding Principles of Internal Displacement, which was devolved under the leadership of Francis Deng and widely accepted as being the global standard for protecting and assisting internally displaced persons. I'm glad to tell you that joining us here in the studio, and these are experts who are going to talk to us and discuss about this particular issue, is Dr. Choloka Beyani, who is author of the African Union Convention for the Protection and Assistance of Internally Displaced Persons in Africa 2012, which is the Kampala Convention, and also the Great Lakes Pact and Protocol on IDPs 2006, and also Richard Ruoti, who is an External Relations Assistant working for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in South Sudan. You're most welcome to the Miraya Breakfast Show, and good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to be here once again.
Right. Now, to just dive into this interview, what are the key issues at stake as experts discuss the internally displaced law and policy for South Sudan?
Yes, before my special guest from London, Dr. Brehan Chepin, I'm just going to give a brief context about the IDP situation in South Sudan. As you'll be aware, or most of your listeners are aware, that since 2013, fighting erupted in South Sudan, which started right here in Juba. Mm-hmm. And then it escalated very fast to Upper Nile areas, and a lot of people were either displaced into neighboring countries, and others were displaced internally in South Sudan. And then quickly again, when the agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan was signed in 2015, the peace didn't last for long. In 2016, violence erupted again in Juba. That was in July. And this violence escalated again to the Equatorias, and it produced a lot of refugees into Uganda and internally displaced persons within South Sudan. As we speak, South Sudan has produced more than 2 million refugees into neighboring countries. And within South Sudan itself, we have 1.88 million IDPs who are in South Sudan, including those in the POCs, that is in the Central Equatoria, Upper Nile and Unity regions. So this is why we are saying that the issue of IDPs is a very critical situation for us in South Sudan. So there should be a legislation mm-hmm. to guide the stakeholders on how far the way forward. So my colleague Dr. Brian will talk more about, just to give you a perspective of why we have to move forward.
Good to have you once again, Dr. Choloka. Yes, just give us, why is it important that there must be laws or legislature or policy for IDPs and refugees?
Well, the laws and policies on IDPs are very much a legacy of Dr. Francis Deng, who pioneered the guiding principles on internal displacement, mm-hmm. providing a framework for preventing, protecting, and resolving internal displacement. And indeed, this is the theme of the GP20 event, the 20th anniversary of the guiding principles. So the importance of it is that IDPs are often persons whose needs in terms of protection, in terms of resolving issues, require a total focus from all government functionaries. Now, unless there's a policy or a law to do that, government approaches towards internally displaced persons tend to be ad hoc. They tend to be scattered. Mm-hmm. But the purpose of a law and policy is to make sure that there's a framework in which the entire machinery of government is aligned to provide protection, assistance, and resolving the problem of internally displaced persons.
Yes, and who are the actors or the key actors involved in developing a national law or internal displacement?
Well, the key actors are parliamentarians. The recommendation to incorporate the Kampala Convention, make it applicable as law in South Sudan, started with recommendations made by the committees on human rights and justice, the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management is also involved, the MPs across the board are also involved, mm-hmm. and we started about 2 weeks ago with a training workshop on the guiding principles and on the framework itself. that workshop validated the process of beginning to elaborate a framework. And so this time we met a very high-level event, which had high-level representation from government, MPs and others, to actually look at the draft framework itself.
Right.
And to see what the law would look like. So this is now, I think, lifted the process forward, built momentum for it, and we hope that in the coming few months, between now and December, South Sudan will have a law on IDPs.
Yes. Now, you have been indulged in these participatory discussions. What have been the key issues at stake, as you discussed?
The key issues at stake have been the protection of internally displaced persons is the primary responsibility of the government. How does that primary responsibility get discharged? How does it get reflected in the law? There's also a secondary responsibility on the part of the international system, and indeed the United Nations, UNHCR, and other agencies have been important partners to the government of South Sudan in protecting internally displaced persons and also attending to humanitarian issues.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the nature of this relationship in the law? Then there's the protection side of it, starting with preventing arbitrary displacement. This is displacement that often arises from what may be called ethnic cleansing, discrimination, targeting individuals. How do we make sure that this is factored so that there's a preventive element in the legislation? Then there's the reaction part of it, the response, protection, physical protection of IDPs,
mm-hmm.
but also protection in terms of well-being and material needs and assistance. And then finally, the durable solutions. What kind of solutions would be needed to resolve the problem? And how do we monitor the acts to make sure that all these aspects are implemented?
Yes, talking about the primary responsibility of internally displaced people, it's purely on the government, and you did mention that. Now, in some scenarios, which is not often, but does happen, where the people are actually displaced because of government activities or because the government, the people are scared of the government as such, how can you entrust that, you know, primary responsibility of protecting these same people who are afraid of the same government?
Well, usually persons are afraid of governments when governments are fighting insurgency, when there are counter-insurgent operations, and the civilians are part of the system by which the insurgents hide. And in those circumstances, the counterinsurgence operations, tend to move into areas where civilians are. So the idea of the framework is also to place squarely the responsibility on the government in relation to the armed forces,
mm-hmm.
that counterinsurgency operations have to abide by international humanitarian law, international human rights law, and to bring these frameworks of law in terms of responsibility home by means of a national legislation so that we don't have those kinds of actions or perceptions by which governments are said to displace individuals when they are fighting insurgents.
Right. Now, Dr. Brienne, as you may be aware, great debate has been generated around the advantages and disadvantages of camps. What is your personal view on this?
Well, between 2010 and 2016, I was the UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights of Internally Displaced Persons, and I had actually come here. We had an interview in this very base, and I went around the country. I've gone around the world. So the view is that encampment policies are not preferred. They do not work well for internally displaced persons. However, it's also the reality that we have POC sites,
mm-hmm.
largely because of the way in which the events that my colleague described happened in December 2013 and also July 2016,
mm-hmm.
that civilians had nowhere to go to, given the nature of the fighting that took place, and the closest places they could go to with the UN bases in order to receive protection.
Right.
And this has become a scenario, but it's not just a scenario here. It's a scenario also around the world in most places that IDPs are in camps, but the majority of IDPs the world over, and even here in South Sudan, are not in camps. They're hosted by local populations side by side, displacement affected populations and the like. So the approaches that we're seeking are to address both situations, those in camps and how to provide solutions for them to move out of the camps and resume normal lives, and those who are settled amongst receiving populations and hosts, to have policies of both protection, assistance and development that speak to both populations in order to stabilize the situation. So resolving the problem of IDPs is also an opportunity to have integrated development approaches in relation to populations that are affected.
All right. We'll come back to you shortly, but first let's get back to Richard Ruati. Richard, you've been working a lot with internally displaced persons and refugees. Now, with this particular policy or framework that is being worked on, what do you think are some of the problems or challenges that will be solved if this is put into law?
Yes, as Dr. Brian said, one of the things that that came up as a recommendation is the issue of durable solutions. And we were very privileged that members of the judiciary or the Minister of Justice were there yesterday at the concluding remarks. The durable solution also includes the fact that when IDPs return to their areas of origin, they should be able to access land for both or the land that they previously settled in as their own, or their property that people took over from them as they fled. If there are houses that people settled in, they should be able to be a redress that will give back the land to those people. If they are farmlands, they should be able. And also when they return to their place of origin, there should be access to health, access to education, access to water. So that's why we are saying that the legislation process should include all these aspects so that IDPs do not find themselves in a limbo when they return to their areas of origin. And those who occupied properties or land of IDPs, they should be prepared and ready to return those things to the IDPs. And in the absence of justice, it is not possible. So that's why the government comes to ensure that the legislation will be enforced through the local system, including even the community leaders, to make sure that they get access to services when they return. That is the key in the legislation process.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Back to you, Dr. Choloka. Do you think, are there specific rights for internally displaced persons?
Oh, yes, there are. They are human beings like you and I. But the situation of displacement puts them in a state of exceptionalism where the enjoyment of their rights is neither here nor there, or is very precarious. So they're entitled to all the rights in the Bill of Rights under the Transitional Constitution of South Sudan. So you speak of the right to life. They have to be protected in terms of their lives. They have to be protected against harm, torture, inhuman or degrading treatment, for example. They have to have food, shelter, you know, some of the basic socio-economic rights. Now, in situations of displacement, those rights sometimes are not fulfilled because the entire apparatus and machinery of government in terms of securing rights is focused on the problem. It's the same in relation to fulfilling their socioeconomic well-being. And so we then depend very much on international actors, you know, to fulfill that. So the purpose of the legislation is to refocus again government activity, reaction, response to fulfilling rights, and to bring the rights of IDPs within the framework of the Constitution and within the framework of the laws of South Sudan.
All right, if you just join us, you're listening to the Miraya Breakfast Show, and we're having discussion with experts on the internal displacement law and policy for South Sudan. Just before we let you go, Richard, finally, how is UNHCR working with the IDPs in South Sudan to support efforts to alleviate their plight or their suffering?
Yes, as you are aware that the UNHCR is a UN refugees agency. Much as at this country level, we are focusing on refugees, but however, we work in as a lead agency in the protection cluster. So we work with the other UN agencies and NGOs to give support to IDPs in South Sudan. We work with IOM, we work with WFP, we work with many other international organizations and national NGOs of South Sudan to make sure that the IDPs have got dignified surroundings where they live. We have our team, protection teams that are working in the POCs, that's the protection of civilians, in the central Equatoria, in Upper Nile areas, I should say, or Unity areas also. So we work hand in hand to make sure that all the interventions that are being undertaken by partners, it is within the framework of international protection, so that those rights that Dr. Chaluka is referring to are very much respected, and we look into it that wherever there are gaps, we raise it with the host government, we also raise it with the diplomatic mission in the country, and at the level of the humanitarian country team, which is headed, of course, by all the UN agencies in the country, and together with the SRG, who is Mr. David Sharia.
Right. Thank you so much, Mr. Rati. And now to Dr. Brian. Finally, when should we expect the final law?
We have a timeline of about November, December. I think this is what was projected by the key ministries in the discussions. So the draft that there is there is a zero draft to initiate discussions and to have key consultations amongst many stakeholders, different line ministries within government, humanitarian actors and development actors, supporters of the government of South Sudan, various segments of the government, in order to understand appropriate the process and on the law.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, of course, then would expect a parliament, you know, to pass it. Mm-hmm. Passing it is a parliamentary responsibility, but it also requires different ministries to coordinate with Parliament in doing so and to receive the assent of the President, and thereafter it will become law. So we expect that by the end of the year this may happen, and if it does happen, as I said yesterday, South Sudan will only become the second country in Africa to have a law on IDPs.
Mm-hmm.
The first was Kenya. There are countries with lots of policies. I think Angola pioneered the policies on IDPs first, and followed by Uganda, and now we have many others that do have policies. But legislative frameworks in Africa are rare, so we should count ourselves to be amongst the very best in terms of practice for protecting IDPs when we have the law on IDPs.
All right. Just now, as a former rapporteur for IDPs and someone who has been working on this for quite some time, what will be your final remarks on the issues of IDPs in South Sudan, or what message out there could you like to send?
Well, the key messages are that IDPs are nationals of South Sudan, mm-hmm. are citizens of the country. They are entitled to participate in the affairs of the country. A situation of displacement tends to exclude them, you know, from that. But by having a framework that seeks to resolve these issues, IDPs are integrated in the country as full citizens with responsibilities, with rights. That contributes to peace and stability. It's a vital aspect of the peace process that is going on at the moment. And the peace process will be anchored on having victims of conflict and displacement rehabilitated and reintegrated.
All right, Dr. Chaluka, thank you so much for coming to Mirai Studios. We do appreciate your time. Richard Ruthie, thank you for coming. We do thank you so much for the interview.
It's always a pleasure to be at Radio Mirai.
Thank you.